Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. And this episode is supposed to be in accompaniment with slash watched alongside episode 5 of the Weird World Adventures TV show, streaming now on Amazon Prime and Tubi. All right, so this episode, the next two episodes, I'm going to have quite a hard time not totally just watching and not saying anything, because I have so much to say about the paranormal investigations. I had never really done a real paranormal investigation before, and Elizabeth Saint is a pro at it. She had several shows that she used to be on where she did these paranormal investigations. So she was definitely the perfect guru to have with me to help, you know, guide me through some of this. And the things we got were just so bizarre. And, you know, some could say they might be coincidental, but there is quite a coincidence to some of the stuff that's happening, to the point where I don't buy it. There's definitely something much more going on. We'll get into that later. We start this episode at the Devil's Tramping Ground, which is supposedly a spot in North Carolina. It's a circle in the woods where the trees don't grow. And they say that no vegetation grows there, but that's really not true. There was definitely vegetation. There was just no trees. And supposedly the devil rises up out of hell in that spot to wreak havoc on the earth. So supposedly it's another entrance to hell. And it's funny, I've been to several places now that are supposed to be an entrance to hell. Hauska Castle in the Czech Republic is another one where they built the chapel to the castle over the supposed entrance to hell to keep the demons from coming out. And that was pretty cool. It wasn't that ominous. It was just a kind of a neat old historical place to visit. Whereas the Devil's Tramping Ground was definitely creepy, but it's likely because we visited there at nighttime. So that kind of made a difference and set the mood. But prior to showing that in the show, we talk about the mummies of Guanajuato, which are honestly one of my favorite things to see when traveling. I know that's such a bizarre thing to say, but it's unlike anything you'll see anywhere else. And that's what I like about it so much. I've been on several press trips now where I happen to find out that there are mummies, and I'm like, well, we have to go see the mummies. And then I kind of force them to move around the itinerary to take me to the mummies, which definitely happened here. You know, I'm like, well, we got to see the mummies, but we got to see the mummies. And I annoyed our guide / babysitter on the trip until she's like, all right, we'll go see the mummies. And what makes these mummies so wild is that they were basically like naturally mummified. In Guanajuato, there was a cholera outbreak in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they didn't have enough space to bury people. So if they couldn't find family members to pay a burial tax that was implemented, or if families couldn't afford to pay a burial tax, they just dug up the bodies. And they found that most of them were naturally mummified, which was perturbing. And they put them in a back room and didn't think much of it, but then word spread about the mummies of Guanajuato, so people started accepting bribes to come see the mummies, and then until they realized we could make money off this. And then it became this museum. So the Mummies of Guanajuato is a museum showcasing all of these naturally mummified bodies. And I mean, it's just the details and things are wild. The burial gowns, the shoes on some of them, because the shoes, sometimes the clothing decays away depending on the material. If it's cheaper material, the clothing won't last and it'll kind of like morph into the body. But the ones that had nicer material, the material stayed. And then their boots a lot of times, you know, stayed on because they were like thicker material. So just looking at the garments that these people were buried in, looking at their expressions and their faces, it's a lot. It's not easy to see, but it is most definitely fascinating. There's baby mummies. There's a fetus. It's definitely not for the faint of heart. And I mean, it also adds a lot of questions about morality because, you know, they just dug up some of these bodies and put them on display. And they originally thought that perhaps the bodies were mummified naturally because the soil is very mineral rich and there's a lot of, I believe, silver in it in Guanajuato. And later they realized, well, these bodies didn't have any, like, real connection to the soil. A lot of them were in these stone mausoleums and wooden coffins. And then they realized, oh, these bodies might have been cooked alive. So now they believe they were naturally mummified because they were dehydrated by being kind of cooked alive in the hot Mexican sun down in Guanajuato, which is also equally disturbing. I actually went there with my friend in 2017, and she was like, oh, it'll be so easy. You've been to the catacombs of Paris. This is nothing. And then we went, and I'm like, oh, this is a lot harder to see than something about seeing the actual, you know, mummies with their flesh still on. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. It definitely hits you harder. And I definitely had nightmares. There's this one mummy that you'll definitely see in this episode who has this big burial gown. She definitely looks like an older woman and her hair is all still intact. And just she really got to me. I had nightmares about her. It was... And I mean, they made horror movies about the mummies of Guanajuato because they are so disturbing. I've written about them a lot on my website. So if you go to mallorysadventures.com, you can definitely read up more of the fine-tuned details about the mummies of Guanajuato. And we also talk about them, as I said, in this fifth episode of Weird World Adventures. Then we moved on to someone that really just touched my heart in the best way possible. There's this man named Dr. Harold Sims. And when he was younger, he didn't really quite understand what he was doing. And because of his dad, he became a fur trapper. Like, he would trap animals. And, you know, later on, he realized that that wasn't good and it wasn't something that he should be doing. And he actually turned around and dedicated his time to saving cats. And he created Catman 2, which is a cage-free shelter in Kolohe, North Carolina. And in order to fund that and kind of, you know, send some proceeds that way, he created the American Museum of the House Cat, which is a museum dedicated to house cats. And it is definitely one of the most insanely wonderful places I've ever been to. He just has hundreds and hundreds and thousands and just a whole space of just cat objects, cat artifacts. Some of them are like centuries old. There was Egyptian cat artifacts. Then there's like random cat pop art. There's things from Cats the Musical. There's all of these things that are just spectacular. And I had such a time there. And, you know, he's an older gentleman and he was saying that, you know, he's looking to have someone, you know, to either help him with the business or to, you know, invest or to buy it out so he can keep his legacy alive. And his story really inspired me to the point where it is one of my goals, hopefully, to make enough money to be able to buy the Catman 2 shelter and, you know, the cat museum to just fund it and own it from afar to keep this man's legacy alive, because he just was the sweetest and kindest person. He wanted to help cats. He created a cage-free shelter because he used to volunteer at the animal shelter and he found that, you know, some of their methods just weren't ideal. And obviously we don't want to have kill shelters. So he started bringing in cats to be saved from kill shelters and then putting them in this building without cages so that they can, you know, be there and receive medical care until they get adopted by their forever family. They also do some wildlife rescuing there as well. They had a possum with them when I went, and that was really cool. So he just was the kindest soul, and he wanted to help. And anyone that wants to help animals and wants to create a weird cat museum full of wild nonsense in order to fund the saving and rescuing of animals is really just the best human being alive in my book. So I have nothing but wonderful things to say about him, and I hope that I can help him in his endeavors, you know, before it's too late, in the not too distant future. He had this cat carousel. I'm trying to think of the things that he had in his cat museum that were just, it were just spectacular. He had a music box that played Memory. So, of course, naturally, we had to sing Memory together because why wouldn't we? There was these wind-up cat figurines that were definitely, like, definitely close to a century old, if not at least many, 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 many decades old. And he hands one to me, so we can, like, hold on, let me just wind this one up. And he hands it to me, and I'm like, this is so amazing, but also I don't want to break it. And that was pretty cool. The Egyptian artifact was also pretty epic. What else was in there? One of the little cat wind-up dolls has a little mouse pop out of a basket. Like, it's just the cutest, most ridiculous nonsense you'll ever see in your life, and you have to visit this museum. It's wonderful. I cannot recommend it enough. And then we went to Kathmandu, which was, like I said, his cage-free shelter, and we were able to see all of the cats. They all just, you know, flood the door to see you as you come in, which was just amazing. Caleb, the man who runs the shelter there, is just a wonderful guy. You know, he has a lot of care and a lot of love for these animals. And, you know, they talk about how they separate the babies when they first come in, especially the ones that might have health concerns, to make sure that they're safe to be released to the other cats. And there were two little kittens in there that were climbing all over us while we're doing this interview, which was just wonderful. I had a kitten on my shoulder and my head. I think I have a great photo with Matt Pavlo that has kittens climbing all over him. We went into the kitten room at one point, and there was this kitten named Toby, and I had just lost my baby Toby. He was my cat for many years, and he looked like him, and it was such a wonderfully magic moment, but also just so bittersweet and sad. I actually had to kind of keep myself from crying in that moment as this baby Toby kitty was climbing all over me, because he just reminded me so much of my sweet little Toby that I had lost. I can't watch this video full of cats doing adorable cat-like things and not just want to freak out and go, so I'm just going to do that really fast. You can sometimes just sense when someone is a very genuine and kind and wonderful soul. And I really got that from Harold Sims, the work that he's done. And he offers such affordable prices to spay and neuter your pets. He really, really does just want to make a difference in a place where there aren't a lot of people rescuing animals. And I just have nothing but respect for him. And I not only wish him the best, but hopefully we'll be able to help him before it's too late to, you know, get involved with his museum, maybe from afar. But it would be, it's a nice little dream of mine. I want to have a charitable foundation one day, and he would be the first person that I would basically work with to keep his dream alive, would be him, because he touched me in a very deep and profound way. And now I just sound like a lunatic, but anybody that specifically, you know, creates a weird museum to save cats is just more than okay in my book. We stopped by the last remaining Shell Oil clamshell station in North Carolina. I think it was in Winston-Salem. And naturally, every single time I hear or see Shell Oil, my mind immediately goes to the movie Some Like It Hot, because it's one of my favorite movies ever. And the whole Shell Oil, the Marilyn Monroe saying Shell Oil. So, you know, naturally I had to do that on camera because I don't make a fool of myself enough. And that was a fun little pit stop. So then the next thing we did for the show was pull up to the Devil's Tramping Ground, which, as I told you, was the place where the devil rises up from hell. Now, on this segment of the show, to kind of make it more fluid and have a nice, you know, nice balance of content between this and the next episode, we actually took some of the footage from episode 6, where we were already in Asheville, and moved it to episode 5. So this segment with us playing with the box, it's called the Executioner's Block app. And the way that it works is, unlike a spirit box, where a spirit box connects to the radio waves the radio signals to like pull words out, and it kind of randomizes it. And the idea is that a spirit could potentially manipulate that to make it not random and actually phrase sentences together. This is a little bit different. The Executioner's Block app cycles through vocal sounds from prisoners on death row just to make it extra scary, right? Because it has to be scary. But it cycles through vocal sounds, the guttural sounds, I believe, instead, so that the idea is, so it doesn't connect to anything online. And this is the idea that a spirit could manipulate the box to make it say things that are, and so you know, it's going to make random sounds sometimes, but the idea is it shouldn't be able to just sound like words. And we were getting some responses on this that were frighteningly on cue. And like, I don't know publicly what I want to make a statement on yet for the paranormal stuff, because I wish there were ghosts. I want there to be ghosts. I've been a very big paranormal fan. I was the number one fan for Ghost Hunters when it aired, for sure, back in the day. But, you know, I come at everything from a logical mindset as well. So I always want to know the why and the how, and I don't want to just believe something without getting extremely valid evidence. The Executioner's Block, it definitely, I probably wouldn't have believed it was working the way that it was working and working so well had I not been there to see what was going on. It blew my mind. This thing was just naturally responding to us in a way that I can't quite grasp how it did. This is pre-AI, so just, I'm going to put that out there, like, it's not just responding to us, like, this is something, it's not connected to being online, and it was a very old Android app that we just decided to use, and I'm going to say that before I start watching. I'm actually watching this in real time, because I get really into this paranormal stuff, too, and we turned it on in the car, and before we used it, and It was very much responding to us in a way that was more than, see, here I am getting drawn into the episode. Okay. We said, who's behind us? And it said, Matt. I mean, it was things that were oddly specific. And I will say, like, it also, there were so many things that happened over the course of a long time, and when you kind of cut them into such a small time frame, it even looks like more. So it seems so dramatic, and like so much is going on. And I mean, I wouldn't have, like, watching it now, like, I wouldn't have believed all this happened had I not been there and lived through it. But I can tell you, this was really happening, and it definitely has made me question some things and wonder. And I definitely want to do more and understand more about the Executioner's Block app to really get how this worked, because it did really leave me questioning a lot of things. You know, there was a moment after we filmed in Asheville specifically, where we went back to the hotel room to look at some of the footage, and the Executioner's Block app, this is what's so interesting to me. It was actually hard to understand in the moment. So we didn't even understand a lot of what was being said in the moment. And once we looked at the footage later to edit it and kind of analyze it, we heard so much more, and it was so much more clear to understand. I'll say that. And it definitely gave me the chills, because there were just a lot of things that were clearly said that we didn't hear in the moment on the app. And after going through all of that, I was just like, done. And I'm like, I'm going to go to sleep. And Elizabeth's like, oh, we should live stream from the room tonight with some of the paranormal equipment on, so people can watch and let us know if they see stuff. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I mean, sure, sounds like an adventure. But I was also done. So I, like, part of me was like, yeah, it sounds great. And the other part of me is like, but I'm really tired and we haven't slept, and I can't hear that box talk creepy things at me anymore. And the curious side won. We did wind up doing it, but I didn't want to be alone with the box anymore. I didn't want the box in our bedroom where we're going to be sleeping. And it was. And Elizabeth went to the bathroom for a second. And I swear to you, I'm just like, you know, sitting there with the box, and, you know, we're live streaming and I'm talking, and it just goes
I'm gonna get you! And I'm like, I'm done now. It told me it was gonna get me. And she didn't believe me. And then, you know, luckily I had some people on the live stream that were like, no, it definitely said that. So me and that box, we're like frenemies. Anyway, we're going to move on to the devil's tramping ground now. So in the devil's tramping ground, we utilized different equipment because the executioner's block app like wasn't ready necessarily to be charged. So we had a regular spirit box, and she had a tri-field meter that kind of registers some of the frequencies of the area. Something I will say right away, it said that nothing grows in the devil's tramping ground, but that's actually not true. There is plenty of tall grass, small pieces of vegetation. There were just no large trees. There were, like, it was a forest. There were a lot of trees in the area, but specifically there were no large trees, and it did seem to be a pretty perfect circle. So that was kind of bizarre. Also, it's off of the Devil's Tramping Ground Road, which is also pretty funny that they have a whole street named the Devil's Tramping Ground. And we kind of start. It was very eerie. I mean, it was late at night. We're in the middle of nowhere in the woods in North Carolina. And Elizabeth's car just, like, won't stop messing up. Like, the lights keep coming on and she can't turn them off. And so she kept going back to her car being like, what is happening right now? So it kind of, like, set the mood, you know, because you're ready to be scared. This is the first time Matt Pavlo, our videographer, had ever filmed anything like this. And he was like, barely keeping it together. There were a lot of weird sounds happening in the tree line around us, which makes sense because it's a forest. I mean, there's probably tons of animals around, some of them making some very bizarre sounds. And Matt would just, whoosh, whoosh, what's that? Oh my God, what's that? Over and over, which makes for some great television, but some not great camera work. I love you, Matt. You do excellent camera work. But a lot of his footage was just whip, 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 which is great for dramatic effect, but not so great for, like, focusing on what's happening. So it was an adventure in itself that poor Matt was, like, petrified. I'm pretty sure he'll never want to do this ever again after filming all of this. But there were, I mean, in his defense, there were a lot of bizarre sounds. Elizabeth's car kept doing weird stuff. And we switched to the spirit box. And she actually hooked her spirit box up to an old-time radio because, you know, she just liked it for the ambiance and the feel. It just seems to fit more when you're trying to talk to people from a different time that you would come with this box that looks like something from their time. And so here in this episode is the we kept hearing this, like, sound. And then we immediately turn the spirit box on and it whistles at us. And we ask where it is and it says, I'm here again. And then it kept saying things like thirsty, water, fire, things related to hell. Like, because this is supposed to be the entrance to hell, right? So it was like, you know, not exactly like compelling, but it was still... It was bizarre that a lot of the words that we're picking up were Dracula, bat, thirsty, fire, water, hot, burning. So it was like, could be coincidental. I will give you that for sure. But the thing that happened here that was really bizarre was all of a sudden, all the IR lights go out. So the way that it works is there's two cameras and they're filming in night vision. So they have IR lights. Each one had two of them. And, like, you know, you can only access them by turning them on and off on the camera. And so Matt had his two on his camera, and Elizabeth had her two on her camera. And we asked a question. A voice says, I know. And then all the IR lights go out at one time. So all of a sudden, as far as the camera's concerned, pitch black. And all of a sudden, Matt's like, well, why are my IR lights out? And then the spirit box says, lights. Which is, again, more coincidental timing, not like, oh yeah, this is a ghost. But it was pretty strange that it then responds to him by saying lights when he said, why did my lights go out? And then she realized, oh, mine are out too. So they have to individually turn them all back on because that's how they work. So the fact that they all just cut off together at the same time
was pretty intense and strange. I love my faces in this, by the way. I'm watching, like, just the strange, like, I don't know, like, you know, IR experience with my face making, like, what? Ooh, ah. I have a very expressive face for this stuff. Every time the box says something, I kind of, like, smile like a child. And, my wonder is definitely there. I really want to hear the right thing coming out of the spirit box. And then there, again, are a lot of strange noises, which, again, it is a forest, I will say. I'm not saying that that's just, oh, yeah, there's ghosts. Like, again, I told you, I'm not sure. Like, this experience definitely didn't leave me saying, there are ghosts here. But it was definitely a little more than coincidental and very strange how everything presented itself, specifically with all the IR lights on both cameras going out at the same time without being prompted as the box said lights. That was definitely a little more than a coincidence to me. But again, I don't know what it was, but it happened. And then the box says go, and it tells us to go. So then I ask the box, are we safe here? And it says no. But it didn't just say no. It says no in two voices, in which case I curse and say, well, I guess we're getting out of here. And Elizabeth laughs, and Pablo says, I just heard it say no in two voices. And so we're like, well, this is a little alarming. So then I think I'm in the middle of talking to it, and it just says, go. And I'm like, okay, you know what? It just told us we're not safe here and we should go. So we're gonna go at this point, because this is just, you know, a little too perfect. Another interesting thing about the Devil's Tramping Ground, this is the more logistical side of my brain. Nothing grows there, right? So I'm like, we should get a soil sample while we're here to send it to a lab to have it analyzed to see if there is a geological reason why nothing is growing here. So, you know, I'm going to get a soil sample, and then we hear some really strange noise coming off camera. And you can even see me react to it. We're both just like, what was that? So there was, again, probably an animal, but the overall ambiance of this whole place, well, obviously, you know, the entrance to hell didn't open up, was still definitely creepy and alarming. And I did get my soil sample, and come to find out, there were very, 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 very high levels of organic matter in the soil, which actually would lead us to believe that nothing can grow there because the soil will not allow for it. So that was kind of a real scientific reason why nothing is growing there. So I found that interesting, at least. And then as we were packing up for the episode, you know, we started talking about how everything there felt very old and elemental. And I stand by that. It's a very old space in the woods. Everything felt very elemental. There's a lot happening because we're in a forest. And there was definitely some compelling things that presented themselves to us. I wouldn't say that they're spirits. I wouldn't say it was necessarily paranormal, but I definitely can't explain why the lights all shut off at the same moment and why they're, you know, the box says lights at the same time. And there was, and the box says that we are not safe here and we should go. So there were definitely some things that happened. That was the first time I had ever done a real true paranormal investigation. It was a lot of fun. I could honestly do that many, many times and never be satisfied. But luckily, we had a much more compelling and wild experience on the next episode. I caught things that probably traumatized me for life. So definitely tune into the next episode. Episode 6 of Weird World Adventures on Amazon Prime and Tubi. You have to see us talk to the box, which I think might have been a spirit named James. And we also go to the Land of Oz, which is a wild theme park in Beech Mountain, North Carolina, dedicated to the L. Frank Baum books, The Wizard of Oz. Until next time, I hope you guys stay weird, and I'm excited to go over the next episode, episode 6, with you next week. So until then, stay weird.